Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
Ajax, this is the internet's most poorly attended comic book and pop culture podcast.
Yay!
And we're your hosts. My name is Chris Sims. With me, as always, is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you today?
I was doing great. And then, literally, all these empty seats in front of me are empty.
Please ask me how I am.
Chris, how are you?
Lonely.
Let's not make this a set. Let's have fun.
No, look, we're here at NC Comic Con Oak City. Quality-wise, we got a great crowd.
That's
yay!
Woo! Yeah.
Quantity-wise, could be better.
I'm going to say best-dressed crowd we've ever had.
Legit. That is legit. And Matt, what do we do here on this show, normally and in this particular circumstance?
We talk to professionals in the world of comic books about their work.
Not the term.
The books are comic'd.
They're called graphic novels.
You just heard the voice of our guest, Teeny Howard.
That's right. Teeny, welcome to the show. You're here with us for the long haul.
I am. I've been on the show for a lot, and I've been sitting next to these guys all weekend, and we've already used up all the good material, so welcome to an hour of dead silence.
Well, we've exhausted a lot of our future podcast game, Dookie Vape, and I don't want to give that away on the podcast, because we're going to start that up official.
That might be the new hottest podcast in podcasting, the hottest podcast in a podcast, the hottest segment, is no longer Snack Situation, it's Dookie Vape.
Do you think?
Okay, so I want to start this off. We're not going to do like a checks and recs segment like we normally do. We're obviously not going to do comics reviews. I can't say Assassination is great.
Thank you.
It's a great book. But I do think we should maybe talk a little bit about the con so far.
Well, instead of checks and recs, we'll call this How's Your Con?
How's Your Con?
I don't think I have any Ice Cube samples that have those lyrics in them, but I'll try to find a music cue, maybe.
You can still use Check Yourself Before You Wreck Yourself. You can still use it. It's the same segment.
Okay.
Matt, how's your con?
My con is good. I had a good day yesterday. Today has been...
That's an Ice Cube sample you could use.
It was a good day.
But that was today. Not yesterday. Ice Cube don't rap about yesterday.
He's very forward-thinking.
He lives in the moment. So today, I'll tell you the difference between yesterday and today. Yesterday, I dumped a package. We got some very nice, we'll call them swag bags, from the con.
NC Comic-Con, the NC Comic-Con family of conventions, which is Oak City and Bull City, and Greensboro, which is, for some reason, not called Bridge City.
Or Gate City.
Or Gate City, that's what it is. Is it Bridge City or Gate City?
It's Gate City.
Gate City. What's Bridge City? Bridge City, like Portland. I might have messed that up. That Gate City. That's what they should call it. They don't call it that. But they are. They run good cons. They take care of the people. They provided us with barbecue yesterday, which is dope.
Very dope.
And they gave us bags with gum, sanitizer, little chocolate treats, emergency.
They're just chocolate bars. Little chocolate treats makes them sound weird, but okay.
Do you not consider chocolate to be a treat? Excuse me, John D. Rockefeller.
It sounded a little bit like he was saying they gave us edibles, which would also be okay.
You know who'd be into that?
Or that we were given pet food.
I didn't say it was...
Or pet edibles, which is my new...
Or pet-ables.
My new artisanal business, opening up next to Vapelade.
We have come up with so many amazing business ideas.
I'm just going to get this out there so nobody steals it before we can do it.
It's quite us.
Copyright, Clytus Media.
Do not steal.
Clytus Media owns this idea. It's called Vapor Blade. It's a knife you can vape.
I looked it up on Google. No such thing exists. You would think somebody had made this, right? We're going to go on Shark Tank, and we are going to tell Mark Cuban, Vaporblade Mark, we're not going to have any...
No business plan, no designs,
prototypes, nothing. We're just going to be Mark Cuban, Vaporblade. He's going to be like, I'm in for $40
million. Mr. Wonderful is going to tear you apart.
Paul Orndorff?
He's not gonna be into it. He's gonna really get mad at you guys. I'm excited.
We got Cuban.
You're not Cuban. He's the cool one.
Here's the thing. We're at this con and it's great. But there's a table of multiple tables of dudes selling knives. And I look at those dudes and they're so happy.
Yeah.
They're having a great life.
They're living their best lives. I look in the mirror, I see anxiety. I look miserable. Let me tell you a story.
I'm realizing that I should probably take the phone off the table. I have banged on the table a lot. I want to apologize for that. I want to apologize to the listening audience for the sounds you're hearing of table banging.
This is literally the best episode we've ever done.
We will try to refrain from that.
Have you guys ever seen the Japanese cabinet game where you bang on and flip the tables? Have you guys... Okay. Can we take a quick sidebar while I tell you guys about this amazing game?
This is like... We're like six sidebars deep right now.
Yeah.
But please...
We gotta go deeper to get out of the sidebar.
Yeah. Okay. So there's this Japanese cabinet game, and it's...
Explain what you mean by cabinet game.
An arcade game.
Okay. An arcade game,
but it's like, it only comes in like a cabinet, right? Like there's like a home version, like Donkey Konga, you know, like you have to play at the cabinet. But it's got like it's a Japanese arcade game, and it's got like a, what I can best describe as like an airline tray table as the controller. And you play as different levels, and you're like a frustrated person who has to bang on the table and get more and more frustrated. And when you flip the controller, the little people on your screen like go flying, and you have to see how far you can get them. And by far the best level is when you play a frustrated priest at a very emotional funeral, and you flip the coffin, and the body goes flying, and all the mourners are like screaming. Anyway.
That's a fair reaction from those mourners.
I'm going to count that as a wreck. That is a wonderful recommendation. I love it. I'm going to fly to Tokyo tomorrow and go do this. That's one layer.
We're one back.
Peel it back to my story.
Back up one to the next level. Time is only 8 times slower than normal now.
1 minute has passed since we began the podcast.
So here's why I want to get into selling knives at conventions. Because a dude came up to my table yesterday, and this guy looks at my banner. If you've ever seen me at a convention, you know that my banner is, it was done by Adam Riches, who does the packaging art for the G.I. Joe Collector Club. So it is like a G.I. Joe packaging art, but with me instead of like a Tomax or a Zartan. And so it's very G.I. Joe style.
Those are your go-to default G.I. Joe to explain what a G.I. Joe action figure is?
Well, I say Tomax because Chad's a Zaymot. We're in the matching Tomax and Zaymot poses.
Oh, okay.
And I say Zartan because he changes color.
Okay. I was like, just say like Baroness or something normal.
Duke.
Snake Eyes. Like,
can I just say, sidebar to the sidebar, can I just say that's the first time anybody has told me that I wasn't talking about Baroness enough?
But to be fair, look who's talking. It's like,
it's okay,
literally me, who walks around looking like Baroness fell in a thrift store, so.
Okay, so this dude comes up to my table, and he looks at my banner, and he goes, in this smarmy voice, and I hope he's listening.
I'm sure he goes,
I mean, he didn't attend this podcast.
Is he in the audience? I can't tell.
No, he's not. I would have known this man. He's an enemy. He comes to me, and he looks at the thing, and he goes, so if knowing is half the battle isn't your catchphrase, what is your catchphrase?
How did he know that's not your catchphrase, for one?
Who goes around asking me, what's your catchphrase?
Oh, you clearly have never written for Rick and Morty. If you think people don't walk up to you and ask you what your catchphrase is.
We gotta talk about Rick and Morty stuff at cons.
That's a whole follow ax.
Are you going to be at SC next weekend, Teeny?
Okay, no, that's why I'm here now.
If we could get you and Kyle going.
Kyle and I fight.
So this guy asked me, what's your catchphrase? And I go, please buy some comics? Because I wear a tie to these shows because I'm at work. And he goes, oh, that's pathetic. That's so pathetic that I can't even buy anything. And he, like, wanders off. This man was wearing plaid, like, sorry, I'm patting on the table. This man was wearing plaid capri pants, a kimono.
They're called paddle pushers.
A kimono and a feathered pirate hat. I do not have a problem with this. It's a con. You can do that if that's, you know. Like, I'm not here to shame anybody for their choice of pirate hattery at the convention. But don't come up to me telling me I'm pathetic. That would not happen if I was selling knives. Because if you go up to a guy selling knives and you call him pathetic, you know you might catch something.
I love that your entire life path has been forged by the commentary of this one man.
Forged like a knife. Hey,
you're like, that's it. He's like, that's it. That's your. Like now, you're, what's that movie with like Martin Sheen and the guy with the defense license plate? What is that movie? And he has like a really bad day and he goes around.
Kind of falling down?
Yes! This is your falling down, is this guy coming up to your table.
A Joel Schumacher film.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he directed that movie.
I had no idea. Not in his usual wheelhouse.
While you're talking about selling knives, we're talking about business ideas to get this back to Vaporblade.
That was the first sidebar?
Welcome to the Vaporblade.
No. Well, it was the first sidebar to my...
Welcome to the pod. Look, I'm glad you're all here. We're going to need $1,000 from each of you. For this new enterprise.
It's a new form. Okay, look. We make knives, right? They also are vapes. Mm-hmm. Perhaps we have some wrestling-themed stuff that's in our wheelhouse. I think Cuban might like it. We make t-shirts that say, get these blades. Like Braun Strowman's get these.
I got it. I got the ref.
You had a little look of. I was looking for the recognition.
I was considering.
Okay.
Hey guys, I have a thought though. As vape peddlers, you'll be subject to regulations that the knife men are not subject to. Like the knife men have their own set of regulations, but then also when you're vaping, that's also you know their regulations.
Is vaping regulated?
As someone that lives in Wilmington, North Carolina, I will say absolutely not.
Yeah, I didn't think so. I think knives might be more heavily regulated than vapes.
Living in Wilmington is like living in a redneck Blade Runner movie because like everyone has a knife and a vape at all times.
I would say, based on the number of vaping establishments that exist in Wilmington and in where I live in Asheville, anyone can open a vape store at any time with no money.
Like, girls that are selling Girl Scout cookies outside of a grocery store could just also start selling vapes, and like, they're not doing it. I don't know why.
Girl Scout branded vape rings.
With juice that tastes like Girl Scout cookies.
Yes.
Another great business idea. Vape play.
I was looking for a sign on whether I should get out of comics and into knives. So I went to the place where I go when I need to do some thinking, which is, of course, the Waffle House. And I'm enjoying my my All-Star breakfast. It's $7.70. It's the most food you can get for that amount of money.
Are you a smothered guy, a covered guy?
Scattered, smothered, covered, chunked.
Yeah, I'm definitely like a four adjective girl. Like I like a lot of stuff on my hash brown.
The first adjective just scatter them on the grill.
Yeah, throw them down.
Why isn't there like a, like, you know that dude who like put the salt on the meat? Like I would love to see like that with the hash browns at Waffle House.
And like a Waffle House polo shirt.
So the cook at the Waffle House, he gets off his shift.
What?
There's a pack of cigarettes on the floor, by the way. I can see them. They are framed.
Oh, yeah.
All right, guys.
There's a pack of Pall Malls.
This is a vape blade seminar. Please don't bring your smoking
analog
to our home.
Get Big Analog out of here.
Big Analog.
They're full.
I don't want to see them. Get Big Analog out of here.
Somebody's going to be looking for that pack of Pall Malls later, I'm sure.
And when they are, we'll sell them on the vape blade.
They've been trashed where they deserve to be. You can't combine a regular cigarette with a knife.
So I
use item.
Now, this is the Waffle House I go to regularly.
Mm-hmm. For thinking.
I can tell you it's the one on 54, because it's not the only one on 54. But the cook gets off of his shift, and I see him turn to go, like, leave the Waffle House, and he untucks his shirt, his uniform shirt, and I can see that my man has two knives. And when I say knives, I mean daggers. I mean, like, hunting knives, one on each side, ready for the S to go D.
I love this True Blood character of a Waffle House chef more than I've ever loved anyone.
Hold on. Uh-huh. These are not Waffle House chef knives.
No?
Do you think that cooks at Waffle House have their own knives? Like, they're on, like chef's table? Like, this is like Anthony Bourdain?
I mean, I would think maybe he could take his work knives and store them.
No, these were like hunting knives, but one does not usually carry two knives for hunting on the way to the Waffle House.
I can't wait till the next time I'm at a Waffle House counter and I can ask the chef, what kind of knives are you using? What's your technique?
I will bet he will be like, yeah, I've got.
Well, I've gutted a deer with it.
Six on me right now.
He will bust out a butterfly knife and do a show.
And then he vapes from the back of it.
No, copyright us. He can't do that.
No.
He's like, oh, I did this rig myself.
Okay, you cannot vape. I know that I don't want to be a naysayer for this new technology. You can't vape from a butterfly knife because the handle's hollow to store the blade. That's what makes it a butterfly knife.
All right, I think we're okay. One layer, another layer back. Now time is only four times too slow. Vapor blade, copyright us. Okay, one layer back again. I think we're back to one.
How's your con?
Okay, so. In those goodie bags that I was talking about 45 minutes ago.
The ones with the treats.
This room is like Lothlorien. They're going to get out of here and find out that 6 weeks have passed.
In the goodie bags that included chocolate bars, because treats make us sound like animals.
Or edible dealers.
It included little packets of emergency. Yesterday, I put the raspberry emergency in my water. It was good. It made my water taste better. Today, I put the tangerine emergency in my water. It kind of tastes sour now and looks like urine.
That's a visual for the people in the room. But I can't.
Can you guys in the back, way in the back? Here, we'll hold it up so the cameras can see. Can the cameras get a good shot of this water so that the crowd in the back can see it?
Normal. Emergency.
Looks like I'm going in for some drug testing today.
Normal. Emergency.
Put it in your boot so it gets warm. I saw that on an episode of Intervention.
Matt's about to have those elevated liver enzymes.
I gotta go interview for my job at the United Parcel Service. Okay, so that's how my con's going.
Teeny?
Yeah.
Teeny, how's your con?
Pretty good. You know, I've seen a lot of folks come by. You know what? I had a pleasant surprise in that I sometimes make buttons out of, like, copies of my books that get dinged or whatever just to have, and I give them away to people who are nice at my table. And I made, like, four times as many Rick and Morty buttons as I did Assassinistas buttons. And I ran out of Assassinistas buttons, and I still got Rick and Morty buttons, which, I mean, I still probably gave away four times as many Rick and Morty buttons because that's what I planned for. But it was exciting to, like, run out of buttons. I ran out of free things I brought to give away to people who read my book because, you know, we're all just looking for a reason to get into knives. And, you know, I have a reason to stay in comics for at least one more con.
Can we... look, I might be proposing something revolutionary here. Could we, the three of us, start an uprising that leads to these conventions becoming knife cons?
Here's the problem with that, Matt. There are already knife shows. I think it would be a significant step down.
I gotta be honest with you guys, though. Like, if I'm gonna make this step and get out of cons or get out of comic cons, like, I don't think that knives are where I want to go. I think I want to be a reptile person. I think I want to be a reptile showgirl. Like, I just want to bring eggs and like an iguana, some snakes.
Are you talking about Repticon, which I see signs up for all the time?
Do you know I want to go so badly, and it is always the same weekend as another con I've said I have to be at, and I'm so upset. I just want to go to the Reptile Con. Why don't we do like the Knife and Reptile show? Where is that?
You know what's great about the Knife and Reptile show?
Yeah.
You can instantly double the number of reptiles.
They're not worms. If you cut snakes in half, they don't each grow a head and a tail. Is that where you were going with that? Because that's where I went.
I'm pretty sure that they can.
You can just cut off one of their arms and like it grows an arm back.
Snakes don't have arms, Teeny. Snakes don't have arms.
Other reptiles do. Iguanas.
Lizards. We're talking about lizards.
Chameleons. Talking about Kurt Connors.
Yeah.
The lizard.
Lizard, who was a guest at the Knife and Reptile show. He's the guest of honor. His panel gets 10 people.
That's how we make the transition. We're like, come see Kurt Connors, the lizard, from the movie Amazing Spider-Man. Sorry.
Durham Knife and Reptile show, right after Starcade. It's a North Carolina joke.
They were advertising the reptile show when we went to the Garfield convention, and right outside the Garfield convention was a sign for the reptile show.
And we realized the mistake we had made.
Pardon, was this a convention in a place called Garfield, or was it a show dedicated to the work of Jim Davis?
Tina, you're clearly not a listener, which I'm very offended by.
I listen to the ones I'm in.
So, Tina, here's what happened. We got together with Daniel Cablesmith. The writer currently of Lockjaw at Marvel Comics.
Very funny guy.
Carmen Woody at Valiant.
Valiant High. Also a writer on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. And we somehow talked him into flying to Asheville, North Carolina from New York.
We did not need to talk him into it, which is the thing. He was like, I'll come to the Garfield show with you.
Which took place at a Clarion Hotel in Asheville in one meeting room. And was just like a few tables of people selling various Garfield merchandise.
They were incredibly welcoming people.
They were very nice, yes.
What was the, like, the high, like, for these people? I'm gonna ask two questions. What was the highlight of the show from the show's perspective? Like, did they have original Jim Davis art or what?
No.
Okay. What was the highlight of the show from your all's perspective?
I'm going to guess that the highlight of the show from their perspective was probably the lasagna buffet. Yeah.
I love these people already.
Now,
it was a pajama party lasagna buffet. I'm not kidding, and I'm not, like, making fun of them. I would be, if we had any more time, I would have gone to the pajama party lasagna buffet in a heartbeat.
Listen, I could crack on these people, but I'm not going to because they were very nice. They are a group of collectors who get together annually and...
Biannually.
Used to be annually. Now it's
biannually.
Every other year. Just
not
whenever
semi-annually.
They
biannually.
I think...
I don't know what the difference
is. It's every 2 years.
Every
biannually.
2 years.
So they get together and they just like exchange their wares. They have t-shirts and they get together as friends.
Aww.
And they go do stuff.
Yeah. They all know each other. They're all connected through the magic of Garfield.
We were immediately spotted as crashers, by the way.
Duh.
But again, we were not there to make fun of it. We were there to experience the Garfield Collector Convention.
Yeah, you heard about it. I mean, did they advertise it at all?
Yes, on Facebook. But
we found out about it on Facebook. Also, it was Christmas-themed, which was great. Because they had a Christmas tree decorating contest on the con floor, too. Do you know how many Garfield Christmas ornaments there are? A lot. Do you know how many my wife let me put on the tree after I bought them? Zero. I slid one on there.
It was Christmas themed, even though it was in June. But I'm the definition of an irony bro, and they sniffed me out right away.
Yeah.
You were, like, they got you. They had your number. I'm genuine.
You got that tie on?
I mean, they saw me and Kibblesmith, two guys that look like they sit in a room and come up with jokes all day.
Right. They're like, hey, Vice, don't write your article on us. Nice glasses.
Okay.
Then they see me, the guy who argued that Alone was better than Persepolis.
You did do that.
Yeah.
On our show.
On our show.
Okay. Are we done with How's Your John? Because you already talked about that guy.
Yeah.
Who asked you for your catchphrase.
Otherwise, the con was lovely.
And has been. I mean, it's still going on.
It has been.
So, I think now that we are done with that segment, which was interminable, let's talk to Teenie about her comic.
I'm feeling, like, very attacked right now. Hey, everybody's having a good time, Matt. Why are you coming down on it?
It's just like that Garfield convention. We're just trying to have a good time, be ourselves.
I really know how to wreck a party.
So, Tina, let's talk about Assassinistas.
Yeah, I'm not going to eat a stroop waffle on your show. I was just looking for something else.
Yeah, you did just open up...
I was going to pull out a snack. And just...
Teenie's rocking that...
it's a fanny pack.
Fanny pack. Like, pro wrestler style.
Yeah. Teenie, before we get into...
Are there goth Zubaz?
I hope so.
I feel like if you don't know about them, they don't exist. Well, you would know.
I mean... Through the magic of Kickstarter, we can make anything exist. And as Chris Sims himself taught me, they don't have to fulfill. There's no legal obligation.
That's the we were going to have a Vaporblade Kickstarter. And again, we do not have designs.
No.
So we were just going to put in there like, hey, just so you know, you do not legally have to fulfill a Kickstarter.
What if we just got a photo of a regular knife? And then photoshopped in text and an arrow that just says vape goes here in the hilt.
When you have like, I was going to say when you have like vapor coming out of it, that would look like it was like a very fast knife.
Not if you made the vapor swirly so it was clear the knife wasn't moving through air. It was just like ambiently.
It'd just be a big puff.
Two pictures. We have the knife picture, it's pointed up. Then we Photoshop, Control T, transform, rotate. Then we have the knife is pointed down. Then we have the vapor coming out.
You guys would make at least $200.
I would love to have $200.
Yeah.
Let me tell you Same. How much I would enjoy $200.
Wouldn't we all?
Sure. Teenie, before we get into talking about Assassinistas, I do want to do a quick fashion segment of the show.
Okay, sure.
Because we've talked about your fanny pack.
I like my fanny pack.
I like it too. It's very nice. We've talked about...
People laugh, but I'm hands-free.
Your tattoo?
Yeah.
That is coming together beautifully.
Thank you. It's the original art was by Marley Sarconi, a friend of mine and an amazing artist on Shade the Changing Girl and other projects.
And it's Joan of Arc?
Yeah, it's Joan of Arc. She's my girl.
It looks great.
Thanks. Same Joan.
You talked about...
Should be Joan Crawford.
You're wearing green lipstick,
yeah,
which matches your shirt.
And my knee socks.
Wonderful. But what I want to focus on right now is your pentagram earrings.
Yeah, they're really big.
Because I want your honest opinion. Could I pull those off?
It's all about attitudes. You really don't know until you put them on. I would say, like, put them on and see how you feel. You know, do you have ear piercings? No, I would
let's pierce Matt's ears right now.
Live. I pierced my dad's ears when I was 10 during a commercial break on Buffy.
Did he ask you to do it, or did you?
It was my favorite story. He asked me to.
Okay.
I was like 10, and I was like watching. Oh, I wasn't 10. I was like 10 or 11, and I was watching Buffy. And my dad was like, "Chris," I was like, "What?" And he was like, "Come pierce my ear." So I grabbed an ice cube and like I had an earring from.
Wait. Yeah. So this was his idea.
Oh yeah, absolutely. My dad is like, okay. So the comedian from Watchmen was really chill because he smoked a lot of weed and played video games. That's my dad.
You know who would love a Vaporblade?
Probably my dad. Do you make like World War II replica ones? Because he's in like.
On the Vaporblade Kickstarter, we have a question that's like, can you smoke weed in this? Like, well, in the FAQ, can you smoke weed in this? And we say, legally, no, but yes.
Depending on where you live. It's a really good answer.
What would the, like, problems and challenges and obstacles section of the Vaporblade Kickstarter look like? Would it be the longest section?
One of them just says, mine broke already. Like, well, actually, the Vaporblade has not been fulfilled yet, so you're lying to us.
Challenges and obstacles. You're going to have to choose from a wide array of juices.
Challenges and obstacles. Life doesn't always give you what you want. Life is tough, and that's a lesson we all need to learn.
Teenie was in the middle of telling her, piercing her dad's ear story.
That's a very Teenie Howard story. If you were like, hey, Chris, come up with, like, a fake story about Teenie Howard.
Do you want to hear my other one? My other fake story about Teenie Howard? Or it's a real story about Teenie Howard that sounds fake? When I was, I think, a sophomore, I went to high school. I went to school as the Crow for Halloween, and I made my mom come get me from school because I was too depressed to stay the rest of the day. That's like another story about me that sounds fake but isn't. I went to school as the Crow and was too depressed to stay there all day.
If I was your mom, and you called me and said, hey, come get me from school, because I'm dressed as the crow, and I'm too depressed to stay here, I'd be like, Teenie, can't rain all the time.
My mom just came and got me, but she probably should have said that, and I probably would have felt better and, like, skateboarded away. Like in the rain, like the little girl from The Crow. You know, hot dog with onions on it. But I don't want onions because they make you fart big time. Like, I'll just quote The Whole Crow. That's the whole.
Yeah.
That's the whole podcast.
Another, the third fake surrounding of the Teenie Howard is she can quote the entirety of The Crow
on a podcast.
Okay, so I'm sure we'll get back to Vapor Blade eventually. Because everything comes.
We got 20 more minutes in this. We got this room for 20 more minutes.
Well, let's talk about some comics, Chris. You were working your way into a question about Assassinistas.
Yeah,
let's talk about Assassinistas.
Sure.
Who really did the kidnapping?
Oh, that's you're asking like plot questions.
No. Wow. Let's talk about the genesis of.
Okay.
The beginning of the genesis.
In the beginning. So Assassinistas is an idea that I had had for a while. I actually wrote a short story like forever ago called Heartbeats. That was like me working through the beginning of the idea. And that's actually where Octavia and Dominic, who are the main characters, that's actually like the first place you see them. And a scene from that short story, like I wrote into one of the issues because I just wanted to have it there somehow. You can actually read the whole short story on my Patreon. But I put it up there just for funsies. But yeah, it kind of came from, like, I don't know where it originally came from, but the thing I tell people that it feels easy to connect to is I remember when Terminator Salvation came out, I was really upset because all I wanted was a movie where Sarah Connor and John Connor were badasses, like, alongside each other. And, like, we didn't get that. And I'm like, I really wanted that. I wanted, like, older Sarah Connor and with, like, John Connor, like, fighting together as like mother and son. I thought that was super cool. So I wanted that. So that's kind of part of where I came from. Part of it came from this story that I wrote, which was about, the story of Heartbeats is about the character of Dominic trying to come out to his mom over dinner. And she like is suspicious instead that he's like, she's like, I can tell you have a secret. And he tries to kind of come out of the closet and be like, my secret is that I'm gay and I don't know how to tell you. And she's like, no, like where this boy that you met, where'd you meet him? Like, he's probably sent by one of my enemies, you know? And, like, she makes it all about her. So that was an idea I wanted to work into it. And then I also, I remember at one point I just had the idea of, like, Deathstroke, if you were played by, like, Pam Grier. That's kind of where Octavia came from, was Deathstroke as Pam Grier. And then I just, it became, like, a place for me to put a lot of things. Like, if you've read the book, you know, the origin of the Assassinistas is not, like, as fun as something like Charlie's Angels. It's a little more sinister, and there's kind of, like, a...
There's literally the line in there. It's less Charlie's Angels and more Charlie Manson.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's less Charlie's Angels and more Charlie Manson. Like, they're, you know, they're the reason that, you know, they looked like these little, like, you know, there's, like, the white girl in the tennis skirt and, like, the black girl with the afro and, like, the Asian girl with the samurai swords because this creep, like, picked them out and put them together that way. But they, like, were able to find something meaningful in that, and then that kind of became the genesis of their group. And then, you know, and then we see a lot of that in the past of the story. So it was like, a lot of stories that I wanted to tell about different kinds of people, and all those people kind of came together into, like, a fun, dysfunctional family. But, like, in a lot of ways, Assassinistas is my way of doing something like Venture Brothers, where it's, like, there's a really... kind of zany zeitgeist that we all understand, and like Adventure Brothers, it's the, you know, it's basically like superheroes and like, you know, G.I. Joe and all that, but like in Assassinistas it's basically like action movies, you know, and it's everything from Charlie's Angels to Kill Bill to you know, Terminator to like all of these action movie tropes, you know, and stuff I think it was Jeremy Whitley described it as Unforgiven for Charlie's Angels.
That's a very good way of describing it.
Which I really, really liked. It was kind of a way for me to put all these stories together, and they kind of formed this dysfunctional family. And then the reason I really like shows like Venture Brothers or like Rick and Morty is because they take something we all get, like Venture Brothers, it's comics, Rick and Morty, it's sci-fi, and they use the fact that we're aware of these tropes to like kind of push some of the backstory aside and get right to telling these like meaty stories. So that's kind of what I wanted to do with Assassinistas, was to take like this language of tough chicks in action movies that we all use and we all still trade on and we all still like, but actually give them like depth and personality and family and give them the same challenges that we deal with, which sounds a little basic, but I had a lot of fun doing it.
So, was this one of the launch titles for Black Crown?
It was. There was. There were three, well, four launch titles for Black Crown. They announced Kid Lobotomy, Assassinistas, Punk's Not Dead, and The Quarterly. And then, just at Emerald City, they announced the second wave of titles, which is House of Muck by Chris Sabella and Sean McManus, which looks super amazing. Chris Sabella is one of my favorite writers, and he's a good friend of mine, so everything he comes out with, I just gag over. And he's got like four creator-owned books coming out this year. Like, he's just been on fire lately. And then my book with Nick Robles, who just did Alien Bounty Hunter for Vault, who's an incredible artist, if you're not familiar with him. He's the artist for my new book, Euthanauts, which is spooky. If you're a Bowie fan, I describe it as Space Oddity meets Black Star.
Okay.
Sorry.
You threw me off.
Sorry.
So, for the listeners, that's going to sound like I said something and you just hated it.
No, not at all. Look, that was a visual for the audience in attendance. You got to see that moment. How did that pitching process work with Black Crown? Like, did Shelley Bond, like, say, like, hey, TV, what's up? What you got?
You're laughing, but literally, I was, like, I was going through this phase where I was, like, sitting around, and I hadn't done a creator-owned book since Skeptics, which was my first creator-owned book, and it was a really tough experience. Black Mask is very hands-off, like kind of like how Image is. It's like, we greenlight your book, and you have to do everything. And I didn't know really what I was doing. It was my first creator-owned book. I'd only made a handful of comics, like even with like teams and help. So it was like trial by fire. And it was a really tough experience. And I said that I was like, okay, my next time I do a creator-owned book, I'm going to need a little more hand-holding. Like, I'm not ready to go over to Image and just drop books on their step yet. I still feel like I don't know what I'm doing. So I wanted to do more creator-owned work, but I sent out a lot of pitches. Other people had read, you know, Assassinistas and been like, it's cool, but it's not for us. It also had a terrible name back then.
Can you tell us what the name was?
It's called Beautiful Sons, which is a terrible name and not at all what the book is about, but it was about, like, I wanted to have a name that focused on both like the like tough female aspect of the main characters and also their like their male children. So it's like Beautiful Sons, terrible title. Assassinistas is a better title.
Great title. Genuinely great title.
Thank you. I've gotten really anal about SEO in my old age. Like, when I go with a title for something, it has to be Googleable. Which is so bleak, but it's real talk. When you make stuff, you want it to be Googleable. Like, basically.
Well, I mean, we talked to Tom Scioli about, honestly, like, one of my favorite things he's done is a webcomic called Final Frontier, which you cannot find.
No, that's so hard to find.
If you don't know his name and you try to find it, it's impossible.
That's tough, yeah, and so I wanted to avoid that. But I was sitting around and I was just like, well, I guess I'm just going to, I mean, I love doing work for hire gigs, but I really was feeling that itch to tell my own story again. And I was like, well, I guess I'll just sit here with it because I don't know what I'm doing. And I had a bunch of ideas and I was like, can't someone just that I really admire and want to work with just like contact me out of the blue and tell me they really like my work? And Shelley Bond was like, hey, I'm coming back to comics and I love your work. And I was like, cool, you edited everything that made me a comics fan. No big deal, no pressure. And I was just like, cool, this isn't gonna work out, but thanks. Like, and it's not only worked out, it's worked out amazingly. Like Shelley and I are both like super intense people, so we work really well together because we just are both like really into what we're doing all the time. Which is great because I think like there are a lot of different work styles, and like her and I are just we're on that. Like we're like the late night email, hey, I randomly saw this thing and thought of a book. Like people, so that works well to work with her on developing my ideas, and then that's kind of how I pitched her a bunch of stuff. She told me kind of about Black Crown and, you know, before it was well known, and I loved the concept of it. It was super cool. It, like, aesthetically was a place I wanted my books, and she kind of casually suggested how I would feel about Gilbert Hernandez on Assassinistas. And I was like, that sounds great, but it's not going to happen. And I said this on the other panel. I was like, it's not going to happen. So, you know, that's going to suck for whatever artist we do get, because I'm going to be like, why aren't you Gilbert Hernandez? Because now I'm married to this idea in my head. But it happened.
So the question, I was waiting for the time to ask the question about Gilbert, because, you know, you hear writers in particular talking about like, well, you know, I would love to put this in front of my dream artist, like, I don't know, one of the Hernandez brothers, but that's never going to happen. And you know, obviously you were saying you tended to think it wasn't ever going to happen. What was the formula that came together? What sequence of events happened for him to end up drawing that book?
I mean, really, it was just like I was struggling thinking of an artist. I was, you know, suggesting some people that I wanted. And, you know, Shelley had said that she was like, for this first line of books, I really want to put together, like veterans with, like, neonates. You know, I think that that's a cool idea. So, like, go wild. And I was just like, it's hard to do that because it's like, when people are like, go wild, name your favorites. I'm like, well, no, because they won't do it. Like, and she was like, okay, I'll start us off. I'm not afraid to swing big. Gilbert Hernandez. I was like, hell of a swing. Like, sure, let's ask him. But that dude has no reason to read any other writer's scripts or do anyone else's work or do floppies or monthly, like, and he did. He loved the concept and really wanted to do it. And he really, like, I mean, I feel so humbled because I'm like, this is, I always feel like he's doing me like a favor. And then I see the pages and I'm like, no, he really loves these characters. And I'm so blown away by that because it's like him and Jaime are like the kings of like really lovable characters. And like, he's so perfect for the book because the characters age, because they have changing relationships over decades, which is such a Love and Rockets thing. And like, I didn't even realize that when I was like pitching it, that it had that much of an obvious Love and Rockets influence to it. And then having Shelley, who's like a Love and Rockets super fan, read it and be like, oh, this is totally a Hernandez joint. Like, was really, really great. And it's also cool because Shelley talks about how Love and Rockets is what got her into comics. And then I talk about how Shelley's line of early Vertigo books is in a lot of ways what got me into comics. So it feels like this cool generational thing.
Here's a fun fact for you, Tini. As listeners of the show know, I have never read Love and Rockets. Assassinistas is the first Gilbert Hernandez comic I have read.
That's great. Honestly, though, like, I love that. I hope that that's the case for a lot of people. I mean, I know that there are a lot of people that are drawn to the book because they're Hernandez fans. A lot more people that are drawn to the book are drawn because they're Hernandez fans, not because they're Howard fans. I'm okay with that. I respect that. He's an Eisner Hall of Famer, and I'm not. But I love that. Like, I love that there are people who are like, oh, you know, I wouldn't ordinarily read a Hernandez book, but I really like the cartooning. And the other thing is that's risky is a lot of people are put off by Hernandez art because a lot of people see it as, like, a floppy, and they're like, oh, cool, like a badass chick assassin book, and they see the, like, Hernandez-style art, and they're not fans of it or not expecting it because it's cartooning art rather than, like, monthly comic art. But I mean, I love it. For me, it's like, you know, a friend of mine said that it gave the whole book like a Wes Anderson feel. And I was like, yeah, like that's that. And like Rob Davis is coloring. He does these like great flat. And it's cool because you don't often see, like the Hernandezes don't always color their work. You know, a lot of their, like Love and Rockets is a black and white comic. And, you know, I have like I have Gilbert's like Naughty Garden of Eden book that's colored. And I made him sign it. And that was fun because he was like, You know what's in this book, right? I was like, yes, boobies, get Beto. I bought it. Like, I just bought it. Also, his like daughter was right there. I was like, we can sign it over here so you don't have to sign your nudie book in front of your daughter. But by the way, his daughter is like an artist and a filmmaker, legitimately one of the coolest human beings on the planet. Like, can you imagine being like the 16-year-old daughter of Gilbert Hernandez and your uncle is Jaime and like you're just the coolest person in the world? That's her. She's the coolest person in the world. I hung out with her at San Diego and I was like, teach me your ways. I'm old.
So, you've got Youth and Odds coming up.
I do.
Also from Blackground. It's spooky.
Yeah, it's spooky in like the existential way. Like the best way I can think to describe this song, the thing that the core of it to me is like it's kind of a Major Tom story. It's like about how, you know, let's say when we die there's something there. It's not heaven or hell, it's nothing that's established for us. It's a void. It's a big nothing. And, you know, most people, like in space, most people when they get to space, if you're not wearing a space suit, you just explode and die. But if you're in a space suit, you can survive. And Youth and Odds is kind of a book about how you live in a way to build your space suit and how you die. So that when you die, you get your space suit and you can explore and you can see what's there. It's also about how you send that information back because there's really, you know, there's something scary about exploring a new frontier and knowing that you can't go the other way. You know, you can't go and come back. Unless you can, and if you can, how do you do that? So it's kind of it's a scary existential frontier story about life and death, and it's, I'm really trying hard to not work in any, you know, one paradigm. Like, of the three main characters, one is a very clinical life after death, 21 grams of the soul, clinical person. One, our main character, Talia, is a funeral home receptionist. She's very, like, you know, very, like, 6 feet under the Fishers, like, very, you know, American style of life and death. And then our third character is, like, a pagan radical fairy tradition who believes in, like, reincarnation, which is something that kind of gets in the way of the whole exploring life after death concept. So it's fun. I've been always, like, super obsessed with death, so it's kind of my, this is my weird, this is me getting as, like, Morrisonian as I can.
Well, speaking of near-death experiences and terrifying infinity, you're also writing Asuka backups in the WWE comics.
No one is ready for Asuka.
I was going to ask, were you ready to write those backups?
I'm never ready to write anything. But it was a really, really fun experience. Someone actually asked me, they were like, isn't that hard? Asuka's not super verbose. But it actually made her really fun to write, because it's like I got to give her, I got to kind of think, like, well, what is that like, you know, to be somewhere new? And in my case, when I'm somewhere where I don't feel like I maybe fit in yet, or I feel like I'm still kind of earning my place, I tend to do a lot of, like, quiet observation. And so that's kind of what I put into Asuka. So I made these kind of weird, like, the one of them, I feel like, I think it's like the third one, I'm kind of waiting for that to come out, because it's like kind of weird and quiet and observational, which is not exactly why people pick up wrestling comics, but we'll see how it goes. And I have a 10-pager in the WrestleMania 2018 story that's coming out in April about Stephanie McMahon.
And you said, you told us that Stephanie McMahon and Triple H had to personally approve that story.
Yeah, I had to wait to tell people about it, because they were going to chop off my head if they didn't like it, and I wanted to know if I was alive to tell about it.
So they were going to make you play the game.
It's time to play the game. Is the game Dewey Vape?
That leads us to the end of this panel.
Well, hang on. One last thing before we wrap up. I want to give a PSA.
Okay.
On your behalf, Teenie.
Oh, yeah.
If you are cosplaying as Rick and Morty, and Teenie says to you, hey, Rick and Morty, I write your comic, stop.
It's so funny. Like, I was talking about this, so Kyle Starks and I do a lot of cons together, and it's like, we'll sit next to each other at cons, and Kyle Starks also works on the main Rick and Morty comics, and he also does an awesome book called, he has a bunch of awesome books, like Sex Castle and Kill 'Em All. But we were sitting next to each other. Whenever we sit next to each other at cons and Rick and Morty's walk by, we're like, hey, Rick and Morty, we work on your comic. And sometimes we get really awesome experiences. Like, fans will turn around and be like, holy crap. And, like, they'll hang out, they'll get commissions, they're super stoked. We have a lot of really good experiences that way. But frequently people just look at me like, hey, stop lying and don't yell at me.
Two dudes today didn't even, they barely turned their heads.
Hey, try writing Deadpool.
Yeah.
Try doing that one. And see if you get anybody to stop.
I gladly will.
All right, so we're gonna wrap this up. Let's do it, Matt. Let's do it. Let's play America's new favorite game.
Do
he
vape?
This is the game where we determine whether someone vapes.
We only have time for one.
It's brought to you by Vaporblade. Who are we gonna do? Because we've done it a lot this weekend already.
Yeah, I mean, it came up, the game, Triple H, do he vape?
Oh, I have my answer.
We need pieces of paper to write down our answers on.
All right, we don't have pieces of paper.
I've got my answer.
I have my answer also.
All right, Tina, you are our guest. Please go first.
He did for like a week. He was like really into it. And then he decided that, like, people weren't commenting on it the way he wanted them to, so he stopped and now denies he ever did.
Chris, I would like your answer next.
Current Triple H, like, the game? No. D-Generation X Triple H. Rips that cotton.
He actually had D-Generation X vapes made. Yeah. They're like green and black.
So like when they do like the reunions, it's like, you know, getting like, all right, I'm gonna rip a little cotton with Sean here on 25.
Oh, and Sean definitely does.
Sean has never stopped vaping.
We didn't even ask if Shawn Michaels vapes.
Yeah, that one's
that's
obvious.
A given. Okay, mine is we were all yes, but kept with caveats.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my caveat: Triple H tried vaping, as you said, Teenie, tried vaping initially. Kind of was like, I don't know. Now he has a vape rig, but instead of e-juice in there.
Vape rig obviously covered in skulls. It's like a Warhammer 40K model.
It's a big iron cross.
Mm-hmm.
And he instead of e-juice though, he just has water in there. He's just vaping water. And then he goes,
yep.
Got it.
Right into the air.
Got it.
As like the spitting
a
of his
perfect
water.
Triangle.
Quick addendum, the vape that Shawn Michaels brings to the reunions has like a naked big titty angel on it. Like an anime angel.
Thank you, everybody, for coming to this panel.
This has been our guest. Assassinistas is the book. Euthanauts is coming out. Magdalena's available in paperback.
Rick
and Morty stuff.
WWE comics. All that stuff. Yeah.
The Finn Balor origin story. Thank you all for coming. We'll be down on the floor. Come buy our comics. Don't tell me how pathetic. I'll be mad about it for 4 years.
Thanks, everybody.
You love you.
Hey, everybody. That was fun, right? This is Matt. I just drove for about 4 hours back from Raleigh to let you all know some information right here at the end of the show. If you would like to email us, you can do so at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is where you can send every story ever lists, panel president lists, or if you just want to drop us a line about, say, sponsoring the show or something else, you can do all that stuff there. Check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. Leave us a review on the podcast app of your choice. The more positive reviews we get, the more we are featured on those places, which is good for everybody involved. Go back to a previous episode to find Chris and myself specifically. We can tell you in those episodes all those places. And yeah, I think that's going to do it for the little end of show information. I had to come back and record separately from the rest of this. Hope you had fun listening to this live episode. That was a very intimate experience. We'll be back next week with another live episode from Greenville, South Carolina. We will be at SC Comic Con in Greenville. If you're going to be around there, come see us. If not, another live show next week. I hope you like these live shows. Until then, everybody, we love you.
Yeah! Flash.